Attention! Attention! All Area 51 stormers! That means you, Larry. Put down the flamethrower. Before we storm the military's worst-kept secret base, I want you to know that having 500,000 of you here really helps with my anxiety. The 20 guards who can fire 800 rounds a minute with their M16s won't be able to stop us all! Hey, where are y'all going?
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes.
Wait! What am I supposed to do with 500,000 egg salad sandwiches?
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Before we dive in with tonight's amazing guest, the whole premise of this podcast is about discovering things that are out of the ordinary. I've recently found a service that helps businesses stand out from the crowd. Even around Halloween time, it's called Blip Billboards. They help businesses of any size, just like mine, with any budget, just like mine, get seen on large format digital billboards. Yeah, that's right. For me, seeing my podcast on a big billboard to get the word out was a dream come true. I never thought I could afford an advertising for billboards. But thanks to Blip and their pay-what-you-want approach, this dream is a reality that truthfully didn't cost a lot and didn't take a lot of my time. You guys know these shows are free, so you know I've got a friend with Blip. All you do is pick the billboard you'd like to advertise on, set your daily schedule and budget, then upload your own ad design. Once your ad is approved, your ad will be live for everyone to see. Blip Billboards is great for standing out locally or boosting awareness nationally. So whether you are a small tech startup, a local restaurant, or anywhere in between, your business can now afford to make these big impressions in the locations that matter to you. And I got something special for all you listeners out there and fans of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. What would your billboard say? Well, why don't you try Blip Billboards yourself today? Go to my special URL to sign up for a free account, and you'll get a $25 Blip credit to help you get started. That's, you can actually check it out. It'll be linked in the show notes to this show. And the address, of course, is blipbillboards.com/odd. That's blipbillboards.com/odd, as in odd to Newfoundland. And now that we got some of my bills paid, it's time for us to get even farther in and deeper so into the Halloween spirit. Tonight's guest is no stranger to the paranormal, really, in many different facets. I'm so happy to have him on tonight. He's a sensitive and an intuitive. He's the founder of the Bronxville Paranormal Society. He's the director of the New York State UFO Project, which I so very proudly have a t-shirt for. Just thought I'd let you know. That's right. Probably the only Newfoundlander out there who got one. And of course, he's also the director of the North American Dogman Project. And he leads up, of course, the New York State chapter of the North American Dogman Project. My guest tonight is Al Santariga. Al, how are you tonight?
Oh, thank you, Jonathan. Wow, that was amazing. You made me sound like I'm somebody special.
Special in a good way. Special in a good way.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, Al. And, you know, I just got to make a shout out right now to your old friend, Brian Bowden, for, of course, recommending you to me. Of course, Brian's an old episode of mine. I don't say friend anymore. I say episode, right?
Yeah. Brian and, is like a brother from another mother. Yeah. Absolutely.
And when I said, man, I'm looking for someone with some crazy stories and experiences to have on for Halloween time, because I know all my oddballs out there are just jonesing for a good scare. He said, man, you got to get Al on. He'll blow your mind. So before we get into all your experiences, I can only imagine you just got your hands in a lot of paranormal things there, Al. Two things I need to say. Number one, I saw you. For the last few years, without ever having a connection to me, I've seen you like a lot of my Facebook posts, including my podcast episodes from 4 years ago. And they'd come up into a group every now and then, and I'd see your name pop up. And I said, man, that guy always likes my stuff. So thank you, Al, for supporting me. And number two, this is the other cool part. I know everybody has a start. Everyone's got to have a backstory, so to speak. How did you get involved with the paranormal?
Well, my mom was, she would have, premonitions. And so she always was connected, with premonitions, and she would get, like, whenever somebody in the family died or a close friend, they would always come by to her. She would see them before anybody else knew about it. And my brother is a parapsychologist. And he was a paranormal investigator when I was just a kid. So there was always tons of books in the house about UFOs and Bigfoots and the Loch Ness Monster and ghosts. And so, you know, I just basically followed in his footsteps.
Wow. See, I'm kind of jealous because, like, all I had was, like, Barbie dolls and and stuff. So my sister wasn't really into that stuff. Although I do remember very distinctly as a very young child, she was babysitting me once and she just like threw on Chucky. And I think that may have started my absolute terror when it comes to a lot of this stuff. But anyway, I digress. Continue on. So obviously this little nurturing nest of paranormal you were kind of brought up in, you know, something must have happened somewhere along the way though. And I always tell people, everybody loves the stories, but you don't become a believer until you have your own experiences. So let's hear a little tiny bit about really your adventure, so to speak, as an investigator yourself.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it all started when I was 10. I was hanging out with my best friend, Richie. He was during the summer. He was sleeping over my house and we were hanging out on my father's garage roof, you know, like an A-frame roof. And we were sky watching. And well, you know, I had the radio up there. We're listening to some music, and we seen some lights in the sky, like dancing, you know, doing figure eights and stuff. And so we, you know, living in, you know, New York City, and we knew all the air traffic, which way it was coming from. But this stuff was way up there. So I said to my buddy Rich, I said, check this out. And I jumped down off the garage roof. I went in the garage. My father had this huge spotlight that he used to use to go crabbing with. And I jumped back up on the garage and I did like a Morse code. And these three stars or points of light, whatever you'd like to call them, stopped moving after I did this Morse code. So we were both looking at it. And then Rich said, let me try. And then he did a Morse code and they did the Morse code back. You know, so we're like freaking out, like, wow, this is crazy. So I said, let me try. So then I went and I did a different code, you know, a different kind of Morse code kind of thing. And one of the points of light dropped from like where it would have been like up at the star level. It dropped down just above the airplane traffic level. And when this point of light dropped down, we just freaked out. We jumped off the garage roof and ran into my room. And, you know, we were like 10 years old and hid under my bed for the night. You know what I mean? And I think that's where it all got started, that night right there.
And, you know, one of my favorite questions to ask people who have had experiences, even as a child, is, you know, with Al's mind now, if you can go back there and stand next to you, what would you have done differently? You know, there's just so much more knowledge now compared to when you were 10 years old. What would Al right now have done back in that situation?
Al right now wouldn't have ran. Al would have said, he'll take me home because I want to get out of here, you know. But no, I wouldn't have ran. I would have liked to seen you know, a nuts and bolts craft up close and personal at that point, you know, instead of just freaking out and running under the bed.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I noticed too, like even in your bio, it just seems like you're involved with so many different parts of the paranormal. And I think I'm starting to get a feel for why it is, because it's always kind of been a part of your life. What do you have to say to people out there who are kind of still on the fence about, you know, say UFOs? What would be your take on them?
Well, you know, I don't try to convince anybody about anything. But what I would say is just look up in the sky and look at all of those stars and all of those planets. And you're just seeing a tiny bit of the sky. Just imagine how much more is out there. And to think that we're the only intelligent life out there is ridiculous.
I can't help but agree there. You know, we get that. I always call it the "what do you believe" paradox, right? You get your religious and spiritual types like myself who do believe there's a creator, and then you got your other people who believe we're all just basically a fluke and created by happenstance and everything in the right place. And I always say to people, well, you either believe in a creator that created everything on this planet, everyone walking on it, and everything in there, who apparently stopped here for no apparent reason, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or or you believe that the building blocks of life are out in the universe and you're literally dealing with millions upon billions of possibilities out there of life just springing up out of nowhere. So there you go. Aliens have to exist for this, folks. We figured it out. Case closed.
I'm a big believer in the creator myself. You know what I mean? I have a lot of faith and stuff, but I can't imagine, you know, if he created us, why couldn't he create a billion other planets just like us, you know?
I think it's a really interesting conversation and a very deep one at that. Let's focus now more on some of the more scarier, shall we say, parts of your career. And I hate to go down the dark well already, but this is a Halloween episode, Al. It really is. I kind of got to dig in there, and apparently you had a friend with quite the history, so I know this is something you wanted to talk about on air, and I wanted to make sure people get a chance to hear this. I think this story is well worth telling here on the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, so take it away, friend.
Okay, well, this story's been 30 years in the coming, because I started at the post office 30 years ago, and when this experience happened to me, a lot of the guys that I was working with were still at work, and I couldn't really talk about, you know, I couldn't talk about this on air or to anybody because my friends were all still working, and, you know, they didn't want their names to be mentioned. I mean, even tonight, I'll change everybody's name to protect their identity, but it's just something out of respect for the guys I worked with. I never told. I mean, I recently started talking about it. But in 1989, I started at the Yonkers Post Office. And, you know, when you first start, they send you out with different guys to learn different routes. You know, like they'll take you out on a business route. One day you'll do a business route. One day you'll do a residential. One day you'll do all buildings. And, you know, I ended up going out with this big Polish guy. We'll call him Sam. And Sam was telling me about his buddy, who we'll call Joe. And he was telling me that Joe had this route in North Yonkers. And on his route, there was a serial killer that was known as the 44 caliber killer, or the Son of Sam. And in 1980 exactly, he was terrorizing New York City, going to all the lovers' lanes and killing everybody, you know, shooting kids and stuff like that. And I remember my brother telling me, you better be careful when you're parked in, you know, one of those lovers' lanes. And I was like, yeah, I'm not worried about this guy. This guy's not in Yonkers. He's a maniac from Manhattan or something, you know? So Sam's telling me about his buddy Joe, and he said, you know, Joe had this route for many, many years and never had an issue. It's a really nice residential route in North Yonkers, a really upscale area of the city. The building was a very high-end building, doorman, big pool in the backyard, tiki bar. Everybody was either a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or a nurse, something along those lines. And David Berkowitz bought a condo in the building, and David just happened to be a mailman, you know, So Berkowitz was killing people in the city. And so this guy, Joe, was working, delivering mail in that building. And there was a basement. They used the bathroom. They had a bathroom down in the parking garage that was for anybody who was at the pool or at the tiki bar. You know, instead of going back up to their apartments, they would just go to the bathroom down in the parking garage. So one Halloween, Joe had to use the bathroom, and the doorman wasn't around and the super wasn't around. So he went downstairs to the basement to use the bathroom. He's used it a million times. He's been delivering mail in that building for years, and he never had an issue. So he goes down into the basement, and he's in the bathroom, and he's doing his business. And while he's doing his business, he starts hearing chanting. And he's like, what the hell am I listening to? And he hears this chanting, and he starts smelling smoke. So while this is going on, he finishes his business. He opens the bathroom door to step out, and there's like 4 to 6 people in hoods in the middle of the parking garage with this black smoke billowing out of the concrete. And they had a fire set up in like a pentagram, you know. And out of this black smoke, this gray smoke came out. He said, and when this gray smoke came out, a demon appeared. He wasn't sure if it was the devil himself or a demon or what. But this entity, for lack of a better word, came over to Joe. Because Joe was just like frozen at the bathroom door. And told Joe, what you seen here, I'll have your life, or something to that effect, you know. And so Sam is telling me this story, and I'm thinking, what a bunch of BS, you know what I mean? I'm not buying this story. This guy, he thinks I'm a greenhorn or something, you know. So I said, so where's, you know? So I said, so what happened to Joe? And he says, so he starts telling me the story that after that thing came to him, Joe went back to the post office and told the manager, I'm not doing that building anymore. As a matter of fact, I need a leave of absence. And he took like a 6 months leave of absence because he just freaked out. You know, he just thought he's had, you know, face to face with the devil, and he just freaked out. And so he took a leave of absence. During this leave of absence, he became an alcoholic. His wife left him. Took the kids, he lost his house, and like his life just started to spiral out of control. So at one point while he was out, New Yonkers is a really big city. It's like the fourth largest city in the state of New York. And so we have a lot of post offices. We have like 7 different branches. And so while Joe was out, another route opened up at a different branch. And he bit off of his route, and he bit onto this new route on the other side of town in the central Yonkers. And when he went to this new route, he had a really, really nice residential route. And, you know, his life started to change back where he cleaned his act up. He got an apartment on the route. He cleaned up his act. He was like the mayor out there. Everybody knew him. Everybody talked to him. His wife and him were talking about getting back together, and everything was going good. You know, all of a sudden he went from this really, you know, deep depression to being, you know, back to normal. Now, while Sam is telling me this, I said, you know, which station did he happen to go in? And he said, well, he went to the Centux station. It's a central station in Yonkers. Now, I just happen to have my brother-in-law who works in that station. Sam doesn't know my brother-in-law works in that station. And my brother-in-law lives right around the corner from me. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, I'm going to talk to my brother-in-law about this, see if this guy, Joe, really exists. So as time went on, Joe's delivering the mail. He's got this one dead-end street at the end of his route. Just houses on the right side, and it's like, woods on the left, and it's like a little, like, park area at the end of the route. It's just like a meadow with a big tree in it. So Joe's delivering this route every day, and He gets starts getting to the last house, and at the end of the street, there's a black cat. And every day he goes to this last house, this black cat attacks him every single day. So he starts spraying this cat with the dog spray. It has no effect on the cat. So Joe starts holding the mail at the post office. So eventually, the people who wait or who live at that house at the end of the block call the post office and say, "Hey, listen, we haven't gotten mail in weeks. You know, Joe doesn't deliver mail to us anymore." So he says, "So the manager says, okay, let me go check over by the route. Maybe you got your mail on hold for some reason." So he goes over, and all the people's mail is under the desk in a bucket. And he says, "Yeah, we got all your mail here. I'll find out why Joe's not delivering the mail." So Joe gets back, and the manager says, "What? Why aren't you delivering these people's mail?" He says, "Well, you got to tell these people to bring their cat inside. They got like an attack cat, and this cat's attacking me every day. I can't get to their house. I sprayed a cat with dog spray, and it has no effect on this cat." So the manager says, "Okay, Saturday I'll go out there with the mail and I'll ring the bell." So the manager goes out there that Saturday, and he rings the bell, and the people come to the door, and he says, "Listen, I got your mail, but you got to do us a favor during the week. You either got to keep your cat inside, or put a mailbox on the fence on the other side of the street where Joe can put the mail, because your cat's attacking him." And these people look at the manager like he's got two heads. Like, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Joe says you have, a black cat that's been attacked." And they say, "No, we don't have a cat. We never had a cat. As a matter of fact, everybody on the block's got a dog, but their dogs are in the backyard. Nobody's got a cat around here." So the manager says, "Well, I'll have to talk to Joe about this." So the manager goes back and he talks to my brother-in-law, who happens to be Joe's floater. He does the route on the day that Joe is off. So he texts to my brother-in-law, we'll call him Donnie, and he says, "Donnie, have you ever seen a cat out there on Joe's route on such and such a street?" And Donnie's like, no, "I never have any problems delivering the mail to that house. I've never seen a cat out there." So, talk to the truck driver. We'll call the truck driver, George. And he says, so the truck driver who delivers all the packages to that area grabs the truck driver and he says, "Hey, George, Joe's telling me there's an attack cat out on the street. Have you ever seen him?" George's like, "I've been delivering packages there for 15 years. I've never seen a cat out on that block." So no one sees this cat but Joe. So as time goes on, all of a sudden, this cat's waiting for Joe every single day. And the cat starts talking to Joe. Now, I don't know if he was talking to him through some kind of telepathy, or if he was actually having a conversation with Joe, I'm not sure. But he starts telling Joe, "By the end of the summer, I'll have your life. For what you see in that day in that building, at the end of the summer, I'll have your life." So Joe's freaking out. You know what I mean? Because, summer comes and goes, and Joe's delivering the mail, and he's putting the people's mail in their neighbor's box, and they're getting it out of their neighbor's because it's not going to their house. So the end of the summer comes, and it's a Saturday, and Joe never comes back off the road. It's like Labor Day, or Memorial Day, whatever the last holiday of the summer is. I don't remember. And so he never comes back. So the truck driver, who's usually the last guy back, the manager says, "Hey, George, have you seen Joe out there? Because Joe never came back." And George says, "Well, I seen Joe's car out on the route, that he drove out in, but I didn't run across Joe all day out on the route." He says, "Well, do me a favor, take a ride out to the last street on the route. And if he's out there, tell him to come back. It's, 6 o'clock. I want to go home. It's Saturday. The holidays here. I want to go home." So George says, "Okay, no problem." Jumps back in his truck and he goes to the end of the route. He gets to the end of the route, and on that big tree in that meadow is Joe, who hung himself with his mailbag.
Oh.
And he's swinging there dead as a doornail. So George runs to the local deli, and he calls 911. The cops come. He calls the manager. The manager's station comes, and everybody's there, and this is just like everybody's freaking out. They can't believe this guy's dead. So when Sam tells me this story, I'm not really buying it. So I go home that night and I call my brother-in-law and I say, hey, Donnie, you know, I heard this crazy story today, you know, can you validate any of it, you know? So I was talking to my brother-in-law and he says, yeah, that's exactly what happened. He said, you know, I was his floater and George was his truck driver. And, you know, George was the one who found him. And, you know, the dude really did die. The real dude hung himself with his mailbag on that tree. So I was like, wow, I can't believe it. So the route that Joe had originally, which was the David Berkowitz's building route, the guy who had the route was hurt. So the route, I mean, like he obviously got hurt like in December or something. And so the route was vacant. So my manager says to me, he says, hey, you want to hold this route down through the winter, you know, at least you'll know what you're doing every single day instead of doing a different route every day. And I said, yeah, absolutely. I have no problem. I'll hold that route down. It's a beautiful route. It's in a nice neighborhood. I'll do it, you know. Uh-huh. So he says, just do me a favor. And I said, what's that? He says, whatever you do, don't ever use the bathroom in the basement. He says, I don't care if you have to jump in your car and drive back to the post office. Don't ever use that bathroom in the basement. And now our manager, this guy, DJ, he was a really cool guy, you know. And I was like, okay, DJ, no problem. I'll drive back to the post office, you know. So, time, you know, I'm in the building every single day. I get to know the doorman. I get to know the super. At one point, I have the super bring me up to David Berkowitz's apartment because they're not renting it anymore. They're using it as like storage. So we get up there and we're in the elevator. We're going up and I'm telling you, the closer we got to his floor, which I think was like the fourth or fifth floor, the heavier the air got in the elevator. And when that door opened up, that elevator door opened up, that hallway had such an evil vibe about it. Just, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, and the maintenance guy, this guy Jose, he was scared to death. He wouldn't go in that apartment for anything. He would send other people in to get the material that he needed, you know. I'm walking to that apartment. He opens up the door and I go in and I'm thinking, how can the people on either side of this apartment or above him or below him not feel this evil presence? Because I can feel it. I mean, there's evil in that apartment. You know what I mean? All my life, I got vibes. You know what I mean? I'm not psychic by any stretch of the imagination, but I would get vibes. I'd get feelings. I get gut feelings. And I'm in this apartment and I'm thinking, man, this is some bad mojo in here. And I look out the back window of his living room, which overlooked the pool, which overlooked the dead end street where the dog, Sam was the name of the dog, was supposedly talking to Berkowitz, telling him to kill all these people. And I went in his bedroom and his bedroom overlooked the back too. So then we left and, you know, it was pretty intense being in that apartment. You know, and went back down and to the lobby and delivered the mail. And as time went on, I got to know more and more people in the building. And as the summer started rolling around, you know, they had all kinds of parties and stuff. Like every day there was a party down at the pool, an ice cream party or, you know, s'mores or something, you know. And they were always like, come down to the pool, you know, you get a lunch too, you know, come down, have a hot dog or a hamburger, get a soda, have an ice cream, whatever, you know. So what I would do is whenever I got accountable mail that needed to be signed for, I would just bring it down to the pool and have the, you know, I would ask the doorman, are they home? And he'd say, oh, no, those, you know, the Joneses are down at the pool. Just go down there and they'll sign, you know, get signed for their own stuff. And I was down in that pool, down in that basement all summer long. In that bathroom in the basement, I must have used it 100 times that summer. Mm-hmm. Never had any issues. Okay, summer comes and goes, and now let me paint a picture. Right next door to this building, this was a really, really big building. It had an east wing, or a south wing, and a north wing, and it had two separate elevators. Right across the street from this building was this park called Untermyer's Park, and this park had a deep, dark history of devil worshippers. There was always some kind of cult going on in that park. There was always some kind of devil worshiping going on in that park. On the other side of the park was a hospital. And my brother worked in the hospital at night as an administrator, and his office would overlook the park, and he would see bonfires going on in the park. And he just, you know, you just knew these people were up to no good. Everybody knew that there was devil worshipers in that park. Everybody knew it. And the cops wouldn't even go into that park to chase the devil worshipers out. They didn't want anything to do with them. They just turned the other cheek. And so summer comes and goes, and the fall rolls around, and here I am. I'm still there delivering mail like I've been doing almost a year now. And Halloween rolls around. And I notice Halloween rolls around. And this was very strange because this building had parties for everything. Valentine's Day, Thanksgiving, they would always decorate the building. And they had a community room where they always had parties and stuff. Halloween comes around. There's a zillion kids in this building. And there's no decorations. And there's no nothing. It's like a ghost town. It doesn't make any sense to me that they would celebrate everything but Halloween. Halloween is like the biggest celebration for kids besides Christmas, you know? And I couldn't figure it out. And the funny thing about that building, which I knew something was wrong with it the minute I got the first day I delivered the mail there, when I got back to the office, I said to the boss, I says, why is the building number 43? I said, that was the number of the building. It's 43. Why is it, or 42? I said, why is it the only building on the odd side of the street with an even number? It didn't make any sense to me. You know, why, you know, every house on that side of the street had an odd number, except this building had an even number. Well, I found out later that the real number of the building was 35, but they changed it so that people wouldn't, because there was too many people coming around looking at the building when the police captured Berkowitz coming out of that building, you know, when they finally arrested him, you know, there was a lot of people coming by. So they changed the name of the building, the number of the building, so people couldn't find number 35. But I knew there was something funky about that right away. It just didn't make any sense to me. So Halloween comes and there's nobody around. The doorman's not around. The landlord's not around. And I got to use the bathroom.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So I'm like, okay, I can't use the doorman has his own bathroom in his office, but he's not around. I went to the landlord's apartment, rang his bell. I figured I'd use his because I'm, you know, this is the one day of the year I'm not going down to that basement, you know. but the landlord's not around either, and it's either driving, you know, 10 miles back to the post office or just going down, you know, one flight of steps using the bathroom. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna roll the dice on this because I've used this bathroom many times, you know. So I went downstairs and I'm in the bathroom and I'm doing my business and I start hearing chanting.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, no way. So the first thing I do is I shut the light off to the bathroom and I sit up. I put my back against the bathroom door and I'm not coming out of that bathroom until that chanting is gone. So at one point, I cracked the bathroom door just a little bit, just to get a peek out, you know, after I shut the light. And there were six guys in robes around the fire, a pentagram that was on fire in the basement, billowing out black smoke. So I slowly closed the door and locked it, and I just sat there. And I sat there and I said, now all the mail is in the lobby. This building was a big building. They got a lot of mail. They got like six big sacks of mail every day. And so after like an hour and a half, the doorman finally came back to his post and the landlord came back and they realized that the mail is here, but I'm nowhere to be found, you know? So they started looking for me. And eventually they wade their way down to the basement and I hear a knock on the door and I hear the landlord say, is there anybody in there? And I say, yeah, Jose, it's Al. I'm in here. And they say, are you, they thought I was locked in. I was stuck, you know? And they're like, oh, don't worry. We'll get you out. Don't worry about it. I said, no, I can get out. I just, as you know, the coast clear. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, is everything you know, everything okay out there? And he said, yeah, everything is fine, you know? So I open up the bathroom door, and there's Jose and the doorman, and they're looking at me, and they're like, what's going on? And I bring him over to where the fire was, and I show him on the ground. I said, look, there was a pentagram here that was lit on fire. And I showed him the roof of the garage ceiling had all black soot on it. I said, this smoke was hitting the ceiling, you know? So Jose says, well, I gotta clean this right away before the people of the building come home. Because if they come home from work and they see this, they're going to freak out. These people complain about everything, you know? So, you know, we went upstairs and I delivered the mail. So around the corner from that house, there was a sweet little old Polish woman that used to wait for me every day. And every day she'd have like a coffee or tea, or in summertime was lemonade or iced tea. She would always be waiting for me with a piece of cake or something, you know? So when I got to her house, because her mailbox was down in the driveway, but she lived like the first flight of stairs was like, you know, 40 steps to get to her apartment, and she was a little old lady. So I used to bring the mail up to her a door, you know, just rubber banded, so she wouldn't have to go up and down the steps. So she really, you know, appreciated that. So she would always have coffee or cake for me. So finally I get there one day and she's, oh my God, you know, Al, you're so late. What happened? You know, and I told her what happened in the building. And she goes, let me tell you a story. I said, go ahead, tell me a story. She goes, you know, that park across the street, there's devil worshipers in that park, right? And I go, yeah, I know the park's got a history of devil worshiping. Yeah. And she says, a young couple moved down in the first floor of this house a couple of years ago. And they were a nice young couple, and they lived here for like 5 years. And during that course of time, the wife got pregnant and had a baby. Well, during that period where the wife got pregnant, got a baby, the husband fell in cahoots with the devil worshippers at the park. So when the baby was born, the devil worshippers all came to the house, and she believes that they were going to take that baby and sacrifice it in the park. So what she was upstairs and she heard the wife screaming and all this commotion going on down and downstairs on the first floor. She called the cops. The cops came, locked everybody up. You know, told the wife, took the baby and moved out, ended up going back to live with her parents or something. And when I guess when all of these devil worshippers got out of jail, they all went their separate way, you know. But the woman told me, she said, after they left at night, she would hear banging on the pipes, banging on the ceiling. The lights were always on in the apartment. She would hear the water running. She would have to go down every night, like shut everything and lock everything. But she could understand how everything was going on because there was nobody in the apartment. It was vacant. She said the feeling got so bad that when she would bring other like Polish immigrants to the apartment, because this was like a Polish section of Yonkers, when she would bring other Polish immigrants there to look at the apartment to rent, they would feel the negativity in the apartment. They would just leave. They want nothing to do with it. So at one point, a priest from Poland was visiting her parish, and she had the priest come in and do an exorcism of the apartment. And he got what was ever in that particular apartment, he got it out, and she was able to rent that apartment again to other people, you know. Me personally, I never heard those people that were doing the chanting leave. I didn't hear like the elevator door open and ring and let them, you know, because if they would have got on the elevator to leave, you would have heard the door ring. I believe I didn't hear the garage door open because it was, you know, automatic garage door. I pressed the button. I never heard the garage door open. I believe that those people that were there took the steps back up to their apartment. I personally believe that there was some kind of cult in that apartment, devil worshiping cult in that apartment of all these rich people. And I think they personally, I think they used Berkowitz as a goat, you know, to do their bidding, you know. And because Berkowitz always said that he belonged to a devil worshiping cult and there was more people involved than just him. But no, of course, no one ever believed him. But my wife and I, when we were dating 30 something years ago, her parents lived across the street from that park in the condo complex. And we went to the park one day to hang out and just have a picnic. You know, she said, let's go to the park and have a picnic, you know. She didn't grow up in that part of town. She grew up on the other side of town, but her parents had retired and they bought a condo on that side of town. And so we're sitting in the park and it's a beautiful sunny day. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous. And this park is, it's a gorgeous park, just absolutely gorgeous. And we're sitting there and we're sitting under the tree and we're having some, you know, wine and cheese and listening to music. And my wife says, hey, have you ever been down to the devil worshiping caves on the aqueduct? And I was like, yeah, I've been down to those caves. I've been down there before, you know. And she says, well, can you show me where they are? I said, yeah, I'll show you where they are. No problem. So we get up and we start walking across this big field that looks like a football field. And we're walking across it. And all of a sudden, I swear to God, Jonathan, all of a sudden, the clouds roll in. The wind picks up. And it's getting really eerie. Okay. Now, in this park, they have the back steps are called the Thousand Steps because it goes from one street to another. And it's like a block long. It's nothing but steps. They call it a Thousand Steps. It goes past the aqueduct. Well, as we're walking down the steps, we get down maybe a flight or two, and we got a long way to go before we get to the aqueduct. And we hear what sounds like a whoosh go over our heads. I mean, it sounded like a bald eagle just flew by us. I mean, we literally both ducked. We stopped, and we looked at each other, and she goes, did you hear that? And I go, yeah. And I go, did you feel that? Because you could feel the breeze, you know? And she goes, yeah. And we're both looking down on the aqueduct, this, you know, this just dirt path that they used to bring the water from the Catskill Mountain region down to the city. And we're looking at this aqueduct. We're looking down, but there's nothing there. You can't see anything. But we both feel that there's something there looking at us. You know, and we both feel that whatever there is evil. So my wife says, you know what? Let's forget about the caves today. Show me the bird's nest. They had this cage. They called it the bird cage. It was this big, giant cage. You know, I don't know what they used it for. Underneath it was like a little grotto. They would have like plays in the summertime and stuff like that. You know, Shakespeare in the Park kind of thing, you know. And they had this big, giant bird cage. And the park actually called it the Eagle's Nest, but all the kids from the neighborhood called it the bird cage. So we're on this paved road and we're walking with the parks department used to clean up the park. You know, it had like the garbage cans on it and everything. They would drive down with the pickup trucks and throw the garbage cans in the back of the truck to empty them. We're walking down this paved road. We're walking up it, actually. We're walking up this paved road. And as we're walking up this paved road, there's this giant oak tree to the right of us, maybe 100 feet in front of us, with this huge branch that goes across the road. But it's, you know, 50, 60 feet up in the air. And as we're walking up the road, again, we hear the whoosh. And we feel the breeze. And we both duck. And we both stop dead in our tracks. And we're both looking up at that branch. And I turn to my wife and I say, what are you feeling? And she goes, I'm feeling the presence of evil. She goes, what are you feeling? I said, me too. And I go, what do you see up on that branch? And back in the 70s, there was an old cult classic movie called The Gargoyles. Okay. And the leader of the Gargoyles looked like the devil himself, with the horns and the wings, the bat wings, and the whole nine yards. Well, she said, have you ever seen the movie The Gargoyles? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, I see the leader of the gargoyles up there. And she goes, what do you see? I said, I see the same thing. And we had never, ever spoke about this movie before, you know? And, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're in the mid-80s at this point. This movie was in the mid-70s. You know, we never discussed it, but yet we were both seeing the same thing, same image, you know? And she looked at me and I looked at her and I said, you know what? Let's just get the hell out of this park, you know? And we left that park that day and we've never gone back, ever. I said, you know, I'm done with this park. I'm not going back, you know. And I'll be honest with you. I have friends on the BPS team that want to go into that park and investigate. And actually, the chief of police in Yonkers is a good friend of mine that I grew up with. So I could probably, you know, reach out to this guy and get us in there at night, you know what I mean, without getting arrested or anything. But you know, I want nothing to do with that park and the history of that park because it's just bad mojo. And, you know, that's my David Berkowitz story, you know. But the funny thing about it is at some point, you know, over the course of the years, I ended up working at CENTOC. Okay, the station where this guy apparently killed himself. So we had a group of guys called the Day Gamers. Whenever the Yankees had a day game, we would all help each other run through the routes and then go to the bar and watch the day game, watch the Yankee game. So we're up at the bar one day and watching the Yankee game. And George, the truck driver, comes in and he's playing a game of pool. So I go over to George and I say, hey, George. Any truth to the rumor, you know? And he goes, what rumor is that, Big Al? And I said, the rumor about this guy Joe that hung himself down on such and such a street. And he said, oh, yeah. He says, that's no rumor. He said, that's fact. I found him, you know? And I was like, oh, okay. You know, it's just, you know, I wanted to hear it for myself, you know? And the funny thing now is, I'd left that station to go to another station. Well, now I'm back at that station again, and I'm George the truck driver. And I delivered packages to that street every day. And every day I go down that street, I look at that tree, and I think of that story every single day. I've gone like full circle, you know what I mean? I'm the guy with 30 years on the job now, and I'm the guy delivering the packages to that street. And every time I get down that street, I think about the cat and the and Joe and that tree, you know. It's just it's crazy how it all has gone full circle, you know.
Such Halloween-y things to represent the ghost story as well. An old tree, a guy hanging from it, and a black cat. Oh God.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, apparently that cat was an apparition of what he's seen in that, you know, basement that day. You know what I mean? It found him. It eventually found him, even though he was at a different station on the other side of town. That thing found him, and, you know, the guy ended up committing suicide. It was horrible.
Wow. Well, time for a change of pace, so to speak. Bronxville Paranormal Society. Let's talk a little tiny bit about some of your more, shall we say, creepy, strange, maybe the more unnerving experiences you've had with this team.
I'm sure Brian told you about the Nuclear Lake story.
Probably not.
Okay, well, okay, 2015, I decide I want to go to this place. It's called Nuclear Lake. And the reason it's called Nuclear Lake is because they used to mine uranium there. Okay, and they had a facility on the lake where they were refining the uranium, and there was an accident. The facility blew up, the uranium went into the lake, and hence the name Nuclear Lake. Okay, well, as time goes on, I'm doing research on the lake, and Appalachian Trail runs right through the lake. And I'm you know, doing history. I used to take my dad, a German Shepherd, and we used to go there all the time on the weekends and hike through the woods and everything, me, my son, and the dog. And I started noticing, like, wood structures and stuff, you know. And I was like, you know, this is pretty strange. This is not normal, you know. So I said this to Brian and our camera guy, Bill. I said, you know, Halloween, me and Bill decided to go there one day and do like a preliminary investigation and just walk through the lake and see what we could find. Well, we came across this these three quartz crystal stones set up in like a pyramid shape. And it was on the west side, the east side of the lake, on a high ridge overlooking a swamp with a stone wall behind it. And it was just like there's stone walls that run through the northeast of the United States. They're just all over the place. Nobody knows who built them, why they're there. It's just they run parallel to one another. They're 10 feet apart from one another. Just doesn't make any sense. So we find these three quartz crystal stones. We say, okay, let's come back here on Halloween and to do an investigation. Okay, sounds like a pretty good deal. So we go back, Hallow's Eve. It's Hallow's Eve. There happens to be a meteor shower that night. And now I'm researching the lake and I'm finding out all kinds of stuff. There's balls of lights. People report balls of lights, orbs in the woods. There's a couple of sites that are technically you could call them campsites, but you're not allowed to camp at the lake. You can camp off the Appalachian Trail, but not on the lake, where Sasquatches have been seen, have come into people's camps on more than one occasion, two or three times. So you got Sasquatches there. You got these balls of lights. People have seen balls of light come out of the water, UFOs siphoning up the water out of the lake. There was an abduction experience that happened at the very next lake, maybe a mile away south of Nuclear Lake, called Whaley Lake. There was an abduction there. So I'm thinking, you know, I get my psychic on the phone and I say, well, what do you think? And she's like, oh, my God. She said, this place is crazy. She said, the energy in this place is just off the charts. And she says, OK. She says, so we scattered out three locations. And she said, OK, the first location, you're going to have like, you know, Bigfoot experience here. You're going to have some kind of cryptid experience here. I'm seeing Bigfoots. She calls them the guardians of the woods. She calls them the guardians. She said, you're going to have Bigfoot at the second location. You're going to have more paranormal kind of stuff, shadow figures and stuff like that. And at the third location, you know, you may even see a UFO or something to that effect, you know?
So what you're saying is this would be like the best place ever for me to go on vacation.
So, you know, all us guys being from New York, We take what our psychic says with a grain of salt, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I got to be brutally honest. We never go into an investigation thinking or looking for what she tells us is going to happen. We go there just the opposite, thinking that whatever she said is not going to happen. You know, we don't even think about what she said. We just go in and see what happens. We roll the dice and see what happens. And at the end of the night, she's usually right. Everything she says usually happens. Okay. So we're at the first location, and I got the three crystal stones, and I'm shooting them with a thermal imager, and they're not giving off any energy. I put a compass on it. They're not doing anything. So, you know, I said, okay, so we're not getting much of anything yet, but it's still daylight out. And so we call the psychic, and she says, okay, you know, as soon as it gets dark, things are going to pick up, you know, right now nothing's going to happen. So I break out a parabolic mic. Okay. And I'm listening and we're getting a Morse code coming out of the sky, you know, and we're all trying to, and I let Brian listen to it and I let Bill listen to it. And we're all trying to figure out where this code is coming from, you know, and Brian saying, well, it could be radiation at the treetop level because these trees were small when the accident happened. And Bill's thinking it could be a radar tower or a microwave tower that's sending off some kind of frequencies. And I'm thinking there could just be a UFO behind the clouds that we're not seeing, you know, but we're getting some kind of Morse code. Okay, after that happens, I break out a Tibetan singing bowl and I fill the woods up with frequency and vibration. And the whole atmosphere of the wood changes. all of a sudden, the energy level is through the roof. And now I put the compass on the three stones, and the compass is spinning like a top. I filmed the stones with the dermal imager, and they're white hot. So Brian says, let's call Cindy, the psychic, up again and see what happens. We get Cindy on the phone, and Cindy can't even talk to us. Sounds like she got cerebral palsy. We have to move like 100 yards away from that area so she could just talk, because the energy was so, the level was so ramped up, she couldn't talk. So she's saying, what the hell did you guys do? You know, what did you guys do? The energy is like insane. Whatever you guys did, you know, you really ramped it up. So we're sitting there, and I don't know if it was the energy of the woods or just what was going on, but at one point I heard through the parabolic mic, I heard footfalls coming our way. Something bipedal was walking in the woods from the west side of the woods to the east side of the woods. And I let Brian and Bill listen to it. And I'm saying, you know, all we have on us are 10-inch survival knives, 18-inch machetes, and pepper spray. Okay, nobody's carrying any firearms. I won't allow that. And, you know, we don't have any, we don't have a campfire going. We're using either headlamps or glow sticks, you know. And I'm saying to Brian and Bill, cover the glow sticks up, because I think there's other investigators in the woods, and I don't want them to come over and find us at this location. I want to save this. I want this to be our spot. And Bill and Brian are looking at me like I got two heads. They're like, Al, what are you talking about? It's Halloween. There's nobody in these woods but us. She says, what's ever coming to us has got to be like 10 feet tall and 1,000 pounds, because the footfalls are like so heavy. He goes, it's not a person, you know, but for some reason I thought it was a person. So we hear these footfalls come right to us underneath the ridge that we're on, below us in the swamp. We hear it stop, and we're all sitting there, and we hear a rock knock, boom, boom. So now we're all getting pretty excited. You know, the psychic said there was going to be Bigfoot experience here. So I do a tree knock, bop, bop. All of a sudden, we get. Now, that night, because it was a full moon, there must have been a kennel to our east. The dogs were just going crazy. They were howling, going barking, going crazy. And to the west of us on the high ridge to the west, the coyotes were just going off on the moon, just howling, going off. Well, after I did the tree knock, we got three of the most powerfulest whoops that you ever heard in your life. Whoop, whoop, whoop. I mean, not only did the ground we were on vibrate, you could feel come up through your legs, but you could feel it hit you in the chest. And we all just looked at each other, and we couldn't believe what we were experiencing. Now, we had night vision camera going, IR, full spectrum, thermal imager, just a regular camera. We had all kinds of stuff going that night. So we jump over the wall to go to the over this little 3-foot wall, jump over the wall. We run to the edge of the ridge line, look down in the swamp. Bill's got a 1500 lumen flashlight. He hits that swamp and lights it up like daytime, and there's nothing there. Well, we just heard three whoops. It took us like 10 seconds to get over that wall. Where did this creature go? So we don't see anything. Okay. So we go back to on the other side of the wall. We sit down in our chairs. And Bill is like, you know, maybe we should go. You know, maybe we wore out our welcome on this side of the lake, and we should go to the second location. And I'm like, nah, let's just hang out a little bit longer. I feel like we need just there's more to come, you know. I just didn't feel like I was ready to leave. So we're sitting there. All of a sudden, a rock comes flying over the ridge, the size of a grapefruit or a softball or something like that, lands between me and Brian, rolls down, hits Brian's chair. Brian says, okay, maybe it's time to go. And I'm like, nah, I'm just not ready to leave yet. I just hang out a little bit longer. So, okay, now Bill's sitting. He's closest to the wall with his back to the wall. I'm in between him and Brian's to my left. And we're sitting there with just the glow sticks on. We don't have our headlamps on. And all of a sudden, we start hearing something charging up the ridge. Something that's on all fours, and we can hear it. You know, you got to remember, this is Halloween. There's a lot of leaf litter. There's a lot of twigs on the ground. We're in the middle of the woods, 4 miles away from anybody. And we hear, bada boom, bada boom, bada boom. Something is charging up the ridge. So we all stand up. Bill takes off running. As he runs past me, and I don't know how I did this. I honestly don't know how to do this, because my sight was focused on where the sound was coming from. We put our headlamps on, and I'm just looking to where the sound is, because I'm thinking there's either going to be a black bear coming over this wall or a mountain lion is going to jump right on me, and I'm going to have to kill it with my survival knife, you know? This is what I'm thinking going through my head, you know? It's because you can hear 4 feet hitting the ground, ba-da-boom, 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 and it's charging. So Bill's running by me. As Bill runs by me, I just reach out with my peripheral vision, grab him, stop him dead, spin him around, and say, stand your ground. Stand your ground. We pull out our survival knives. We're waiting for this thing to come over the wall. The sound comes right up to the wall and stops. Nothing comes off of the wall. So we just look at each other like, what the hell? You know, what the hell? We all heard it. You know, there's no way three people are having the same hallucination. You know what I mean? We all heard it charging up the ridge. So we jump over the wall again to see where it is. 3 miles away from us to the south, we hear three more whoops. And Brian's like, did that thing just go from here to there in like a second? And I'm like, no, it's impossible. There's no way that thing can run 3-4 miles to the other side of the lake that fast. You know, that's got to be a different one over there. And Brian's like, I don't know. I'm not so sure, because we didn't hear anything leave. Whatever came charging up the ridge never left, but yet there's nothing there. So I said, okay, it's time to go. Let's go. So we pack up our gear, and Brian is streaming live that night on Twitter. And we're walking from point A to our second location, which is only maybe 10, 15 minutes away. And as we're hiking to our second location, I see this light in the sky, like a strobe light going off in the sky, and it's going from west to east, and then it stops over the lake and it starts to go south. And I'm thinking, oh my God, please don't let this be a UFO. You know, the last thing I want is for all of us to get abducted, because it's my fault, because I was the guy who picked this location, you know. And no sooner did I'm thinking this in my head, Bill or Brian, one of the guys, said, what's that? As soon as they pointed up to the sky, what's that? This thing stops dead. And it's just there in the sky. And now it's turning from silver to white to orange. Brian is streaming live. He's filming it. He's filming the whole thing. And all of a sudden, this thing makes a beeline towards us. It comes right over to us. And it's hovering above us. And you can hear us on the video. We got it on YouTube. Hear us saying, what is it? It's not making any noise. Is it a helicopter? Is it a drone? I don't know. It sounds like there's an electrical hum. And we're trying to figure out what the hell this thing is. And at one point, it hits us with a floodlight. At that point, I turn to Bill and I say, time check. And he says, it's like 9 o'clock. I was like, okay. So this thing is hit. We're looking, as it comes over to us, I tell everybody to shut off their headlamps. As soon as we shut off our headlamps, it hits us with a floodlight. So we're sitting there, we're looking up at it. We're all trying to figure out what the hell this thing is. And I say, you know what? We should step out of this light, because we don't know what this light is doing to us. You know, let's step out of this floodlight. So as we all kind of back away from the center of the floodlight, the light goes off, the thing takes off, and boom, shoots south, and it's gone. A blink of an eye, it's gone. Boom, just gone. So we're all thinking, wow, that was pretty crazy. You know, that was wild. We get to our second location. Now we're in a meadow at the foot of the Appalachian Trail, and we're sitting in the meadow, and I'm looking across the lake to where we just came from, and I see two little lights go on, like two little orbs light up in the woods. And, you know, doing the research, Native Americans say don't chase these lights through the woods, because they're no good, they're evil, and, you know, they're going to make you have a bad fall or an accident or something, just don't chase them. Let them do what they got to do. So these lights come on, and so I turn to Brian and I say, "Hey, Bri, you hit the one on the right with your green laser, and I'll hit the one on the left with my red laser." And I said, "Bill, at the same time, you light up the whole area with your 1500 lumen flashlight. Let's see what these things are." So he says, "Okay." So on three, boom. Soon as our lasers hit those two lights, they both blinked off. Bill hits the area with the floodlight. There's nothing there. Now, according to our team psychic, those lights are fairies. That's what she told us they were. They were fairies, okay? And she said that we would see fairies and we would have fairy encounters. So now we're sitting in this meadow. Bill is filming the meteor shower, and I'm seeing 7-foot shadow figures jumping from tree to tree. And so I'm taking pictures with my little Sony digital camera, and Brian is looking over my shoulder, and he says, "I'm telling you, I'm seeing little gnomes in the background running from tree to tree." And he says, "Bill, take the camera and film those trees because I'm seeing gnomes." So now I'm taking pictures of the shadow figures in the trees. Brian's taking pictures of the gnomes. We're using two different cameras, okay? I get a blue mist and a red fog in my pictures, and Brian gets a blue mist and a red fog in his pictures. Two different cameras shooting in two different directions. It was a perfectly crystal clear night that night. So now Bill is filming these trees where Brian is seeing these gnomes. I'm holding the monitor because we have the camera attached to a monitor. We got an SD card in the monitor. We're filming, and sure as shit, hand to God, two little gnomes run out from a tree. First, one guy runs out from one tree to another, and then 10 seconds later, another one runs out right behind him. And Bill's freaking out, and he's looking at me. He goes, "Did you see that?" I said, "Yeah, I see that." And he goes, "We got it, baby, because we got it on the SD card." And I was like, "Wow, that's amazing. I can't believe what we just seen with our own two eyes." At this point, we hear what sounds like a family coming. Oh no, when we get to the second site, we call the psychic Cindy up. It's 9:30 when we talk to her, and she tells us we're gonna see all this stuff. You know, we just laugh. Yeah, okay, we're gonna see this stuff, right? So we hear what sounds like a family coming down the Appalachian Trail. It's 10 o'clock at night. Who the hell's out on Halloween with their kids? And you could hear a mother and father talking, and you could hear two little kids giggling and like kicking rocks and stuff like that. And here we are, three grown men sitting in this meadow in the dark with 18-inch machetes and 10-inch survival knives. And I say, "Listen, guys, let's put our headlamps on. So if these people come out, we don't scare the living crap out of them, because, you know, it's the middle of the night and they're not expecting to run into, you know, three armed men, you know?" So we put our headlamps on, we put the glow sticks on. This way we have some ambient light, and we hear the sound of this family come right up to the edge of the Appalachian Trail, and no one walks out on the trail. And we all just look at each other like, everybody heard that, right? Everybody, yeah, we heard it. So me and Bill go into the trail with his 1500 lumen flashlight, and we put the light on, and we walk in maybe a couple of hundred yards looking for this family. There's nobody there. So we call the psychic back up. We say, "Cindy," now she's pissed because she's like, "What are you calling me like at 11 o'clock at night for? You know, it's late, you know?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? We just called you like 10 minutes ago." And she says, "No, you called me at like 9:30. It's like 11:30 now." And I'm like, "What are you talking about 11:30? We've only been here for like 10 minutes. And she said, "Al, we spoke 2 hours ago." So I'm talking. So I look at Bill and Brian. I said, "It's 11:30. And they're like, "No way. We just got here." I'm like, "That's what I said." So we lose 2 hours of time somewhere, you know? What the hell's going on? So I tell her what's going on. And she says, "The family that you hear is not there now. You guys are in like a time-space continuum, and that family's going to be there tomorrow. And that's the reason why you got a red mist and a blue fog in your photographs, because, you know, you guys are like in this time-space continuum. We're like, what are you talking about, you know? So at one point, we decide we're going to pack up and go to the third location, which is the campsite where everybody sees the Sasquatches and stuff. So we get to the third campsite. Now, we hiked into these woods like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, okay? So because I like to do day and night investigations when I go, and I like to do old school, new school, you know what I mean? Old school techniques and modern technology stuff, you know? I like to do a little bit of everything because that's just the way, I guess I got that from my brother, you know? So we get to the third location, and it's like, I wanted to be there for 12 o'clock, and it's like 5 to 12. And I said, okay, this is perfect. This is right when I want to be here. And then Bill says to me, you know, tonight's the night that we move the clocks back. So it's only 11 o'clock. So we got to sit here for another hour now. And I'm like, tonight's the night we move the clocks back? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh man, I'm just too burnt out to sit here for another hour, you know? So he goes, yeah, let's get the hell out of here. So we pack up our gear and we start hiking out. And the game plan before the night started was, when we get out of there, to go to the diner, grab a bite to eat, a cup of coffee, and discuss the night. You know, let's check our notes. Well, as we're walking out, the three of us are talking to each other, and we're like, man, what a shitty night. Nothing happened. We've been here for like 12 hours, and nothing happened. And like, yeah, I can't believe, you know, all this time we've been in here, and we didn't experience anything. And we all get to our cars, and everybody goes in different directions. The next morning, Brian calls me up, and he says, dude, I got a black and blue, like a handprint on my chest, and I'm spitting blue phlegm. Is anything wrong with you? So I go, you know, I got a fat lip. I feel like something has been implanted under my lip. It's really, really hard, and it's just in this one spot. So we said, let's call Bill. We put him on the speaker. You know, we got like a conference call going. And Bill said he had night terrors all night. He was freaking out. He had nightmares and night terrors all night, freaking out. And he's got a bump on the back of his head. Nobody fell that night. Nobody got hurt. And yet we're all showing injuries. So we call the psychic Cindy up. And she lives in Arkansas. She does everything over the phone. She reads the energy through me. She says I'm a conduit or something. So we call Cindy up. And Cindy says, I don't know where she doesn't believe in that there's a lot of portals around the world. She does believe that there are portals, but not a lot. She goes, I don't know about this place. I think it's some kind of a portal. She said, because when I was talking to you guys last night on the phone, the hand that held the phone up in, I got a rash down my arm. She goes, are you guys have any? So we all had injuries. She wasn't even there. She was in Arkansas and she had a rash on her arm. So, you know, we don't know if that light in the sky actually went away when we thought it went away. You know, we don't know if we lost 2 hours of time. It was the most craziest night we've ever experienced. And we've had a lot of crazy experiences, from insane asylums and stuff like that. We've gone to a lot of places. But that night is just we experienced everything in one night. It was just an amazing night.
Well, I tell you what, I feel like I just had some missing time myself, over an hour talking to my friend Al here. Al, this has been just an awesome interview. So much fun. My favorite interviews are the ones where I just sit back and listen to all the craziness and madness from people's past. Guys, his name is Al Santagrea, okay? Sensitive, intuitive, founder of the Bronxville Paranormal Society. He's a director of the New York State UFO Project, director of the North American Dogman Project, New York State chapter. Alfred, where can people find you online? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we do have a website. We do have the Bronxville Paranormal Society website. We're on, you know, all Brian's got us on every social media outlet in the world. And but you can always contact me. We have a hotline number, and it's on our website. It's on the Facebook page as well. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. And if anyone wants to contact me there, or, you know, that's the easiest place to get me is on Facebook.
All right. Well, I'll be sure to link all that to the show notes. Al, thanks so much for coming on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. And hey, happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween to you, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like. And every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.